Chapter 65. Ah, Miss Summerson, she said at last. I was thinking of something so different. I hope you are well. I am happy to see you. Mr. Jarndyce and Miss Clare quite well? I hoped in return that Mr. Jellyby was quite well. Why, not quite, my dear, said Mrs. Jellyby in the calmest manner. He has been unfortunate in his affairs, and is a little out of spirits. Happily for me, I am so much engaged that I have no time to think about it. We have, at the present moment, 170 families, Miss Summerson, averaging 5 persons in each, either gone or going to the left bank of the Niger. I thought of the one family so near us who were neither gone, nor going to the left bank of the Niger, and wondered how she could be so placid. You have brought Caddy back, I see, observed Mrs. Jellyby with a glance at her daughter. It has become quite a novelty to see her here. She has almost deserted her old employment and in fact obliges me to employ a boy. I am sure, Ma, began Caddy. Now you know, Caddy, her mother mildly interposed, that I do employ a boy, who is now at his dinner. What is the use of your contradicting? I was not going to contradict, Ma, returned Caddy. I was only going to say that surely you wouldn't have me be a mere drudge all my life. I believe, my dear, said Mrs. Jellyby, still opening her letters, casting her bright eyes smilingly over them, and sorting them as she spoke, that you have a business example before you in your mother. Besides, a mere drudge? If you had any sympathy with the destinies of the human race, it would raise you high above any such idea. But you have none. I have often told you, Caddy, you have no such sympathy. Not if it's Africa, Ma, I have not. Of course you have not. Now, if I were not happily so much engaged, Miss Summerson, said Mrs. Jellyby, sweetly casting her eyes for a moment on me, and considering where to put the particular letter she had just opened, this would distress and disappoint me. But I have so much to think of, in connection with Bariabulaga, and it is so necessary I should concentrate myself, that there is my remedy, you see. As Caddy gave me a glance of entreaty, and as Mrs. Jellyby was looking far away into Africa straight through my bonnet and head, I thought it a good opportunity to come to the subject of my visit, and to attract Mrs. Jellyby's attention. Perhaps, I began, you will wonder what has brought me here to interrupt you. I am always delighted to see Miss Summerson, said Mrs. Jellyby, pursuing her employment with a placid smile. Though I wish, and she shook her head, she was more interested in the Borealin project. I have come with Caddy, said I, because Caddy justly thinks she ought not to have a secret from her mother, and fancies I shall encourage and aid her, though I am sure I don't know how, in imparting one. Caddy, said Mrs. Jellyby, pausing for a moment in her occupation, and then serenely pursuing it, after shaking her head, you are going to tell me some nonsense. Caddy untied the strings of her bonnet, took her bonnet off, and letting it dangle on the floor by the strings, and crying heartily, said, Ma, I am engaged. Oh, you ridiculous child, observed Mrs. Jellyby with an abstracted air as she looked over the dispatch last opened. What a goose you are. I am engaged, Ma, sobbed Caddy, to young Mr. Turveydrop, at the academy, and old Mr. Turveydrop, who is a very gentlemanly man indeed, has given his consent, and I beg and pray you'll give us yours, Ma, because I never could be happy without it. I never, never could, sobbed Caddy, quite forgetful of her general complainings, and of everything but her natural affection. You see again, Miss Summerson, observed Mrs. Jellyby serenely, what a happiness it is to be so much occupied as I am, and to have this necessity for self-concentration that I have. Here is Caddy engaged to a dancing master's son mixed up with people who have no more sympathy with the destinies of the human race than she has herself. This too, when Mr. Quayle, one of the first philanthropists of our time, has mentioned to me that he was really disposed to be interested in her. Ma, I always hated and detested Mr. Quail, sobbed Caddy. Caddy, Caddy, returned Mrs. Jellyby, opening another letter with the greatest complacency. I have no doubt you did. How could you do otherwise, being totally destitute of the sympathies with which he overflows? Now, if my public duties were not a favorite child to me, if I were not occupied with large measures on a vast scale, these petty details might grieve me very much, Miss Summerson. But can I permit the film of a silly proceeding on the part of Caddy, from whom I expect nothing else, to interpose between me and the great African continent? No. No, repeated Mrs. Jellyby in a calm, clear voice, and with an agreeable smile, as she opened more letters and sorted them. No, indeed. I was so unprepared for the perfect coolness of this reception, though I might have expected it, that I did not know what to say. Caddy seemed equally at a loss. Mrs. Jellyby continued to open and sort letters, and to repeat occasionally in quite a charming tone of voice, and with a smile of perfect composure, "No, indeed. I hope, Ma," sobbed poor Caddy at last, "you are not angry?" "Oh, Caddy, you really are an absurd girl," returned Mrs. Jellyby, "to ask such questions, after what I have said of the preoccupation of my mind. And I hope, Ma, you give us your consent, and wish us well?" said Caddy. "You are a nonsensical child, to have done anything of this kind," said Mrs. Jellyby, "and a degenerate child, when you might have devoted yourself to the great public measure. But the step is taken, and I have engaged a boy, and there is no more to be said. Now, pray, Caddy," said Mrs. Jellyby, for Caddy was kissing her, "don't delay me in my work, but let me clear off this heavy batch of papers before the afternoon post comes in." I thought I could not do better than take my leave. I was detained for a moment by Caddy saying, "You won't object to my bringing him to see you, Ma?" "Oh, dear me, Caddy," cried Mrs. Jellyby, who had relapsed into that distant contemplation, "have you begun again?" "Bring whom?" "Him, Ma." "Caddy, Caddy," said Mrs. Jellyby, quite weary of such little matters. "Then you must bring him some evening which is not a parent society night, or a branch night, or a ramification night. You must accommodate the visit to the demands upon my time." "My dear Miss Summerson, it was very kind of you to come here to help out this silly chit. Goodbye. When I tell you that I have 58 new letters from manufacturing families anxious to understand the details of the native and coffee cultivation question this morning, I need not apologize for having very little leisure." I was not surprised by Caddy's being in low spirits when we went downstairs, or by her sobbing afresh on my neck, or by her saying she would far rather have been scolded than treated with such indifference, or by her confiding to me that she was so poor in clothes that how she was ever to be married creditably she didn't know. I gradually cheered her up by dwelling on the many things she would do for her unfortunate father and for Peepy when she had a home of her own, and finally we went downstairs into the damp dark kitchen, where Peepy and his little brothers and sisters were groveling on the stone floor, and where we had such a game of play with them that to prevent myself from being quite torn to pieces I was obliged to fall back on my fairy tales. From time to time I heard loud voices in the parlor overhead, and occasionally a violent tumbling about of the furniture. The last effect I am afraid was caused by poor Mr. Jellyby's breaking away from the dining table and making rushes at the window with the intention of throwing himself into the area whenever he made any new attempt to understand his affairs. As I rode quietly home at night after the day's bustle, I thought a good deal of Caddy's engagement, and felt confirmed in my hopes, in spite of the elder Mr. Turveydrop, that she would be the happier and better for it. And if there seemed to be but a slender chance of her and her husband ever finding out what the model of deportment really was, why, that was all for the best too, and who would wish them to be wiser? I did not wish them to be any wiser, and indeed was half ashamed of not entirely believing in him myself. and I looked up at the stars, and thought about travelers in distant countries and the stars they saw, and hoped I might always be so blessed and happy as to be useful to someone in my small way. They were so glad to see me when I got home, as they always were, that I could have sat down and cried for joy, if that had not been a method of making myself disagreeable. Everybody in the house, from the lowest to the highest, showed me such a bright face of welcome, and spoke so cheerily, and was so happy to do anything for me, that I suppose there never was such a fortunate little creature in the world. We got into such a chatty state that night, through Ada and my guardian drawing me out to tell them all about Caddy, that I went on prosing for a length of time. At last I got up to my own room, quite red to think how I had been holding forth, and then I heard a soft tap at my door. So I said, "Come in." And there came in a pretty little girl, neatly dressed in mourning, who dropped a curtsy. "If you please, miss," said the little girl in a soft voice, "I am Charlie." "Why, so you are," said I, stooping down in astonishment and giving her a kiss. "How glad am I to see you, Charlie." "If you please, miss," pursued Charlie in the same soft voice, "I'm your maid." "Charlie?" "If you please, miss, I'm a present to you, with Mr. Jarndyce's love." I sat down with my hand on Charlie's neck and looked at Charlie. "And oh, miss," says Charlie, clapping her hands, with the tears starting down her dimpled cheeks, "Tom's at school, if you please, and learning so good. And little Emma, she's with Mrs. Blinder, miss, a being took such care of. And Tom, he would have been at school, and Emma, she would have been left with Mrs. Blinder and me. I should have been here all a deal sooner, miss. Only Mr. Jarndyce thought that Tom and Emma and me had better get a little used to parting first, we was so small. Don't cry, if you please, miss." "I can't help it, Charlie." "No, miss, nor I can't help it," says Charlie. "And if you please, miss, Mr. Jarndyce's love, and he thinks he'll like to teach me now and then. And if you please, Tom and Emma and me is to see each other once a month. And I'm so happy and so thankful, miss," cried Charlie with a heaving heart, "and I'll try to be such a good maid. Oh, Charlie dear, never forget who did all this." "No, miss, I never will. Nor Tom won't. Nor yet Emma. It was all you, miss. I have known nothing of it. It was Mr. Jarndyce, Charlie." "Yes, miss, but it was all done for the love of you, and that you might be my mistress. If you please, miss, I am a little present with his love, and it was all done for the love of you. Me and Tom was to be sure to remember it." Charlie dried her eyes and entered on her functions, going in her matronly little way about and about the room, and folding up everything she could lay her hands upon. Presently Charlie came creeping back to my side and said, "Oh, don't cry, if you please, miss." And I said again, "I can't help it, Charlie." And Charlie said again, "No, miss, nor I can't help it." And so, after all, I did cry for joy indeed, and so did she. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.